Well, hey there. My name is Jason Kaliba, and you're listening to The Real Podcast. For more than 20 years now, I've been a pastor. One of the best parts about being a pastor is serving and getting to know people. People are interesting, fascinating, actually. The more you get to know someone, the more you hear their story, the more interested and inspired you usually become. So I got this idea to start a podcast where I could sit down with some of those people so that other people, like you, could get to know them too. And that's what you get on my podcast, the stories and insights of real people that, I hope, will challenge you and inspire you to grow. This is The Real Podcast. Thanks for listening. Okay, here we go. When I grew up like most kids in Canada, I went to school every day and hung out with a bunch of kids and was led and taught by all kinds of dedicated men and women who had given their lives to teaching. And certainly I owe lots to those people. I can read and write and do math because of their investment in me. Teaching goes a lot more beyond than just teaching the basics. It is shaping people. It is policing people. It is helping them discover who they are and what they're good at. It is trying to instill some discipline, collaborating with parents, and probably about 40 other things on the list that is involved in being in the classroom every day with kids. And certainly in 2020, as the world has changed and our health and the health of our kids has come to the forefront, I just read recently that more than a billion students across the planet have their education has been impacted by the onset of this pandemic. And so in our province in Alberta, we're asking questions about the best way to educate our kids. I don't think anyone is debating the importance of somehow getting better and making sure that our kids continue in their development. And of course, aside from all the politicians and bureaucrats and administrators who are making decisions about how we're going to do this and how it's going to work, we've got teachers in the classroom, like always. And so it is my privilege today to welcome to the Real virtual podcast studio Stephanie Litsky and Rob Wallen, who are both younger teachers, probably more on the front end and the back end of their career. Stephanie and Rob, welcome to the Real Podcast.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
Can you guys just tell us a little bit about who you are? Of course, who you are as teachers, but if there's anything else about you that's interesting. Rob, why don't you go first?
Okay. So I am a middle school teacher currently, and I was born in Calgary, but I actually grew up in Kelowna. And I grew up going to church. I grew up going to public school. I was homeschooled for 1 year in grade 7. So I guess I can kind of claim to be have some experience with homeschooling too. But yeah, for the most part, I was in public school. And I studied history, and then I eventually was like, okay, well, I kind of kicking and screaming decided to go into education. It wasn't like my dream to be a teacher from age 10 or anything like that, but it kind of pulled me in, and here I am. And I trained to be a high school humanities teacher, and when I graduated in 2013, it was, I was in BC. They basically didn't have any jobs, and they said, you know, go work up north, come back in like 5 years, and we'll see if we can get you a job. And I was like, okay, I'm not sure if I'm into that. So I went to Germany for a year, taught English there, and then came back to Canada and got a job in Alberta, here in Cochrane, actually, at Cochrane Christian Academy. And I was there for 4 years, and now I'm at Prince of Peace Lutheran School teaching grade 8, 9, 7, 8, 9. So yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell. And I recently moved to Cochrane in September, and I'm married to Hannah, who grew up in Cochrane as well, and there's some connections at the church through her. So yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Okay, thank you very much. Steph, tell us about yourself.
So I was born in Cochrane, but my dad, he was the pastor of Cochrane Alliance years ago, and then
Very
we
esteemed institution.
we moved to Hungary as missionaries, and so I went to Hungarian school, also a boarding school in Germany, Black Forest Academy. I did some school years here back in Cochrane on home assignment years, and then I graduated from Black Forest Academy and did my university here in Calgary. And kind of the same as Rabbi, there wasn't a lot of teaching gigs here. So I went and taught at a school in Spain for 3 years. And then I came back in 2015, and I've been at Bearspaw Christian School for 5 years now. And I'm married to Kale Litsky from the church. He's also been going there since he was a little kid. And
Cool. And do you consider yourself a newlywed, or now that you've got a year under your belt, it's old hat?
oh, I think we're still newlyweds. I love
Okay. Well, that's good to hear.
it.
Steph, Rob kind of talked about a little bit of his pathway to deciding that he wanted to teach. Did you know, like, he didn't know when he was 10, did you?
Oh yeah, I was lining up my stuffed animals and was teaching them. It's actually how I learned Hungarian. I'd line them all up on the couch and it was just gibberish for the first 3 months. And then my dad said all of a sudden one day he came home and it was actually Hungarian. So as a 5 years old, I was teaching my stuffed animals. And then I think as I got older, I really liked math and I like the challenge of making hard concepts easy to understand, even for somebody who doesn't like math.
Okay, that's a true gift. Rob, you mentioned at the first part of your intro there that you were getting ready to teach secondary school, but now you find yourself teaching junior high.
Yeah.
And some would consider that like not so
Purgatory.
fun teaching middle schoolers. So how, and I've heard you say that you enjoy middle schoolers and actually you have a reputation for being well loved by your junior high students. So talk to us about like how it came to be that you got teaching junior hires.
Well, I mean, basically, it just, by necessity, I was trying to get a job, and I had told myself, I'll never teach anything lower than grade 9. That's my limit. My first job, I taught grade 6, because in Alberta, technically, or at least in Rocky View schools, it's 5 to 8 is considered middle school.
Yes.
And I was like, well, I'll try for middle school. I'll maybe get, I mean, in BC, grade 9 was still junior high. So I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get a grade 9 job. Like, I'll go on the limit. And then little did I know I would teach like a grade 6 homeroom. And it's kind of funny because I remember my very first day. I was used to teaching like high school, and even I was like a TA for international students in college. And I started the classroom, and the kids were just kind of like, goofing around, first day stuff. And then I started, but they were like, wait, you can't just start like that. You got to do the clap, or you got to do the chant thing. And I'm like, what? So they taught me, yeah, like some kids from Cochrane Youth taught me like the chant that their other teachers did. And so then I was initiated into teaching like middle school, junior high kids right on day one. And it's been an adventure from there. Yeah, but someday maybe I'll teach high school, but it's been really fun teaching junior high kids, because they're in a really crucial stage of their life. And if you can survive it and get through it okay, then you're never going to be bored, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can still remember a few key conversations in grade 8 or 9 with teachers actually who were brave enough to kind of point out things, not just about my like academics, but about my own development that were crucial. I feel like I need to reach out to one or two of them and tell them how important it is. Both of you are Christian teachers. Steph, you're at a private Christian school. But I'm curious, how does being a Christian inform your teaching, your philosophy of teaching, and how you approach your classroom or work and your interaction with those around you? And Steph, since you're in the Christian school environment, I'd like you to answer that question first.
Sure. I feel like, well, being a teacher, you want to build relationships with your students. And I feel like you've got more of a platform to do that in a Christian school, because we want to focus on discipleship and we want to be doing mentoring. And we have a lot more opportunities to speak into the kids' lives, discuss things that from a biblical perspective with them. And we can also model for them what it would look like to live a Christ-like life in this world. And so, yeah, that's what I would say.
Okay. And like, do you talk about Jesus doing math? Like, do you like use the 12 disciples to count somehow, or how does Christianity come into the math class?
With perseverance and glorifying God by doing your best. I think it's important to remind them that even this math worksheet, the integrity that you go into doing this, finishing it, completing it, that those are all really important values that they need to learn.
Cool. And Rob, you're the name of your school is even more Christian than Stephanie's, like Prince of Peace School, but yeah, it's public school environment. So tell me about your faith and teaching in a public school environment.
Yeah, I mean, it's, coming from BC, I didn't know that there was such a thing in Canada as a public Christian school mm-hmm. until I started working at one, and now I've worked at two. So I would kind of echo a lot of the things that were already said, but my particular school, and actually both schools that I worked at, it's not like it's full of Christians necessarily. So you still have a lot of the like kind of similar things as a public school, I would say. And I mean, yeah, you have a huge influence. So you're a living example of whatever you talk about. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about discipleship, and kids see you at maybe your best, and they also see you at maybe not your worst, but they see you at not your best too. So there's a lot of that kind of example piece that you have to try and, you know, live up to, which is really, you know, a privilege, but it's also pretty sobering sometimes. But as a teacher working at a Christian school, you can definitely support kids differently. Like you can pray with kids, with your teacher peers, you can kind of support each other a lot differently. But overall, I mean, like I grew up not going to a Christian school. I grew up in a public school, and I had plans to just teach in a public setting. And for me, I would say the biggest piece is, yeah, using that platform for relationships to really be there for kids, because there's so many broken families, there's so many you know, problems with identity, anxiety, like just all these things, and to be there as someone who is a supportive, stable person who is able to be, you know, like a good guide is really important. And I think like, especially now with COVID, but even before, like there's so many, I would say there's kind of like a mini meaning crisis happening in so many ways. And as a teacher, you have an opportunity to be there to help, you know, provide some answers. And in a public setting, you might be able to do that in different ways than in a Christian school, but nevertheless, you can even point to like grand narratives as a thing, instead of it being all deconstructed and there's no point to anything really. So, which is, I think, a big issue in our culture. So, yeah.
So you raise a good point there, Rob, about what kids are navigating as they're coming into a learning environment. What's your take, like, if I were to say what percentage as kids are struggling to get their work done or to understand or just survive at school? How much of the struggle has to do with just learning issues, understanding the material, disciplining themselves, doing their homework, and how much has to do with the broader picture of what's going on at home, things they're struggling with, the social side? Like, is it 50-50? Is it more about academics, or it's hard to say? Like, it.
Oh man, that's like the $1 million question. I mean, it's really hard to say, but I think, you know, we're holistic beings and a lot of things are interconnected. And I know that for most, I mean, some kids are really resilient and it's amazing what they're able to kind of compartmentalize in their life. But overall, like everything that's happening, especially when you're a teenager, really is amplified and affects everything else about your life. So if you're trying to like learn algebra, but you haven't eaten breakfast and, you know, there's lots of stuff going on at home, you're not going to be, you know, able to focus on that stuff too well. So yeah, there's a lot going on for sure. And I would say that it's the personal life stuff trumps academics for most kids.
Okay.
And especially in middle school, I would say, like for me, I think the biggest things that we can try and teach kids is resilience and self-control and empathy. If we can do that, then they'll be successful. But they can learn all the academics they want, but if they don't know how to be resilient or empathetic or self-controlled, they're not going to be successful later on in life.
I know the focus in the classroom and being a teacher is on the student, and as it should be. But Steph, what do you wish your students knew what it's like about what do they need to know about you as a teacher? What do you wish that they just understood that being a teacher is like, and that would better help them give you some support or collaborate with you?
I think it would be nice if they could see the big picture. A lot of time, there's a lot of time, effort, thought that goes into a lesson or the decisions that we make for their best interests. We really do have their best interests at heart, and they can just see their discomfort or their dislike for something in the moment, and they can't look beyond that. And it's really tough. It's hard because we're trying to please the government, the school rules. We're trying to please all the parents' expectations, and we're trying to make it engaging. We're on a time crunch. We're trying to get the curriculum in, and there's just so many people we have to check boxes for. It's demanding and it's stressful. And I wish that they could have empathy for that, or have glimpse, not that they'll understand it, I get that, but just a little bit less maybe in the moment, but just, it's not all about you.
Rob, what about parents? When you think, when you're sitting down with a parent, what do you wish they understood about being a teacher to their kid?
Yeah, I would echo all the things that were said. I would say, you know, like most, by and large, I mean, there's different kinds of teachers out there, but by and large, what I've seen is that teachers really care, like, a lot, often at the expense of their own personal lives and personal health even, which is not necessarily good, but yeah, teachers actually do care. And yeah, they're trying to juggle so many priorities and trying to figure out like what is truly best here. So yeah, we care more than parents often know. And I mean, I'm not a parent yet, so I don't necessarily understand. But a lot of times, parents are dealing with teachers out of a place of fear or stress, and there's kind of that fight flight response that when there's interactions with parents, it can get really intense. And as a teacher, you're like, whoa, like, you know, your kid is your number one priority, but I've got like 90 kids and I'm trying to, you know, deal with all of them. And so, yeah, things it's sometimes tricky to, you know, have empathy at that level for so many people equally. On the other hand, there's just amazing parents who are so supportive. And I also wish that parents knew like how much their encouragement and their kindness means. It can really just absolutely change your day. Mm-hmm. We love encouragement. So that's good.
I could just add to that by just saying, echoing what he said, in that sometimes I want parents to give us the benefit of a doubt. There's always two sides to a story.
Yeah.
Just hearing it from their kid, it's like he said, it is fight or flight. And so I feel like we appreciate the encouragement, but we also appreciate being able to share our perspective and our side. And that definitely would be great.
Mm. Yeah. And I'll just add one more thing. It's interesting because I've taught internationally in Europe and in Asia, parents have a way different outlook in North America. Like,
okay.
In Asia and Europe, teachers are very well respected, and like very rarely would a parent take issue with a teacher. It's just cultural, like it's a cultural norm. And here I found like kids are the law a little bit more when it comes to like he said, she said type things. And it was just an interesting thing coming back to North America and realizing, oh wow, it's a different vibe here. Not always, but in certain instances.
I agree with that 100%.
So let me dig into that a little bit. My perception when I was a kid is if there was a problem at school with me and it got back to my parents, the default mode of my parents would be, we side with the teacher. They're going into the office and their default mode is the teacher is probably the one who's got the picture here. Now, and I don't know, although I am a parent, I've got four kids in public school, but it seems to me that the environment has changed where default mode is my kid. Am I perceiving that right?
100%.
And so how does it play out in discussions, with, you know, like an administrator? Is there a way to mitigate that?
I'll speak to that. We have really great administration, actually, and I feel very much their support. And it's just about approaching those conversations gently, respectfully. But I'm a people pleaser, so it's quite hard on me sometimes when I hear the constant, you know, just not being heard or the assumptions that are being made by parents. That can get really tough.
Let's maybe go to the lighter side, because there's all kinds of different moments in your days, from heartbreaking to the laughter instilling. So give me like your best student teacher interaction that made you laugh and still makes you laugh.
Oh man, there's so many, and I've been meaning to like keep a diary of these so that they don't. So that when a time like this shows up, I have something, and now I'm regretting not doing that. But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I also can't think of one specific thing, and I wish I wrote them down, but I'll just say in general, the interactions with the students and their personalities, I'm laughing and giggling all day long. Like they are the reason I work. I go in, I really enjoy them teasing me, vice versa. And it's just, it can be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a lot of, especially I would say like lower grades. And as you get into middle school, the kind of wonder and innocence kind of turns into something else, a little bit, but there's still a lot of just kind of innocence and wonder in kids, even teenagers, and that's really fun to see. And there's so much just unfiltered emotions still. Yeah. I remember like breaking up boys fighting over a rock, paper, scissors tournament, and it was just really funny how passionate they got in that. Or or how, like, as a teacher, you kind of are always not cool and not with the times, but you're still enough in the times that you kind of know what's going on. Like, so one funny story was, there was a presentation about, like, the solar system or something, and one student was talking about the fun facts about a certain planet. And because, you know, like, phones and hashtags and the number sign, number one, fun fact one, she would say fun fact hashtag one and fun fact hashtag two and stuff like that. Like, oh, that's, yeah, we don't use analog phones anymore, and hashtags are now a thing. And, you know, just there's always these little moments where you realize, wow, the world has changed so much, and I'm like a newish teacher. So, I mean, it's changing fast, and we're kind of right on the edge of it with these middle school kids and high school kids. So it's kind of cool. Also, it's really cool to see, like, because I taught in Cochrane, I see a lot of these kids who are kind of in Cochrane Youth and stuff, you know, that I taught in grade six and so on. And now they're in high school, and just seeing how much they've matured and grown. And you're like, man, I don't know if I had, I didn't know what was going to happen to you. Look at you now. It's amazing. I guess you had some good teachers after me, but good for you. So yeah, no, that's always really cool to see too.
Do you, either of you, have a proudest moment yet? Is there a moment that you look back on and just go, man, that, or what I did, or what I, maybe not a moment, but a kind of something that you've seen take place in the development of a person, or something you taught that really struck home?
There's definitely, like, I don't know, as a teacher, I don't know how much ownership you're allowed to take in terms of being proud of, you know, kids or something like that. But there's definitely, you know, people I've taught who, just seeing where they're at and seeing how they've matured and grown is really exciting to see. And I guess as a parent, you would have that times like a million. But yeah, no, there's a lot of, it's cool how time helps with that. Cause in the moment you're kind of, you can be frustrated and, you know, but if you can look back over a couple of years and see the progress, it's sometimes really just amazing.
Yeah, I had one, when a student says, I hated math at the beginning of the year, it was my least favorite, to it was my favorite at the end of the semester.
Yeah.
That means a lot.
Huh. Cool.
Even if they don't necessarily like the subject, the class itself, they ended up enjoying it, which was, that I like hearing that.
So March 16th, 2020. Something changed about education across the country as schools emptied out. What would you say, what would you have complained about before March 16th? And something that now, like, we say, oh, that's not even close to the worst. What's been the biggest paradigm shift there? The thing that just, aside from the fact that you're not in the classroom and haven't been that way for a long time, what's really your biggest difficulty with teaching, as opposed to what you might have said when I asked that question in February?
Well, I could say the excuse used to be, oh, it's at home on my kitchen counter. But now the excuse is my Wi-Fi cut out. So, you know, I think before, I don't know about... I can speak for maybe the high school level. There tends to be a sense of entitlement a little bit before COVID hit, and that, you know, it's hard. I don't really want to do it. I shouldn't have to do it. And then I think when COVID hit, it was really even harder for them to stay motivated and self-disciplined. Mm-hmm. There was no social aspect that they could have something to look forward to. And so they really ran out of gas and motivation. And that was really tough to try to engage online and get them excited and get them to wake up when they were staying up till 2-3 in the morning, unfortunately. It's how do you have a class and get them when they just, there's just, yeah, lack of motivation.
And just to clarify, Steph, I think Bear Spa's model, at least in the spring of 2020, was to continue online class sessions, right? So you were actually teaching to a room of students virtually, correct?
We were live, and it actually, we were up and running within a week, and it was awesome. Like, I have to say, I really enjoyed the challenge of it at the beginning, and it was new and it was exciting, and the kids could have a chat bar going, and that part of it was great. And don't get me wrong, a lot of kids did do fine, you know, were motivated and were self-disciplined. But even for me as a teacher, when it hits, you know, May and June, you get tired, you're exhausted, you're at home all day on the computer screen, and that's enough to drain anybody.
And Rob, what as you look about, like, the vast change, what's most significant about what's changed once you got out of the live classroom?
Yeah, I mean, I think most teachers would say that their favorite part about the job is teaching students. And there's a lot of parts about teaching that have nothing to do with teaching the student, or they don't, it's not about teaching the students live. And there's a lot of planning, there's a lot of emails, there's a lot of, you know, other stuff that goes on. And so again, like, the main part that motivates you and that you get your kind of, you feed off of as a teacher is gone, or it's replaced with Zoom meetings. And we all know how you know, life-giving Zoom meetings are for days on end, for months on end. So yeah, that was kind of a big part of it. There's this, I would say, in education, but also just in our society, there's always this, like, kind of tyranny of the urgent, where we have so many priorities and so many, you know, deadlines and things, and we're kind of often, maybe not forced, but we're kind of urged towards making choices between what's important, like truly important, and what's in front of us and urgent. And I think often in education in general, that's like a reality. And so having to work with that, you know, cognitive dissonance of, okay, these are the expectations, but I have to filter what's most important and what I can, you know, get away with trying to do. That kind of, in some ways it was easier because there were less hours of teaching. I had less of a commute. It was, in some ways, I was set up to go online pretty simply. But then it's like, okay, well, we have a whole new set of priorities. What are the priorities? Lots of people are stressed out. How do we connect with students? Especially the students who need the most help are going to be the ones who are, like, kind of MIA. And
yeah,
how do we actually cope with all of this? And like, how do you feel, you know, good about your teaching, in terms of not feeling too guilty that you're not doing enough? I know a lot of teachers struggle with kind of finding their identity in their work and kind of pouring themselves into it so much. And I feel like COVID kind of ripped the rug out a little bit with you know, in my district, at least, we weren't able to even communicate with families for the first week. And then the rollout was a bit slower, and then it was very, I would say, like, limited at first what we did, and then we kind of started, but then it was spring break, so it was almost like a month before we started really rolling, and then it was a lot of, like, okay, how do we connect with kids meaningfully, and then how do we connect with the kids who, you know, the real smart ones are the ones who put in just enough work to not be on the radar hit list for us to, like, hunt them down. They would just, you know, just, you know, hand in what the bare minimum. So we know they're alive. We know they're there, but some kids just really fell off the map, and trying to, you know, chase down families and parents and all that, it was a lot of, kind of extra work on that end. And then again, when you're teaching, you're like, okay, well, yes, I can get through content online, but what is the point of what we're doing right now? I mean, at one level, it's, you know, we're kind of keeping society together. We're giving kids and parents things to do with, not go crazy. But on the other hand, it's like, is this really what we should be doing? Like, I mean, what, I think education is going to have to take a look at itself and realize, like, what are we actually in the business of doing, and how do we move forward? Especially if COVID continues, and, or, you know, there's another, who knows what will happen in the fall and the winter, but
yeah.
I have a feeling things might change quickly in the future again. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the whole system responds to that. Even right now, like as we're getting ready for the upcoming year, there's all sorts of opinions, and, you know, the government and the families and the parents and the teachers all have lots of things to worry about. So there's a lot of, some teachers were really, I would say, struggling with like, how do we deal with this all? And sometimes, like, the more conscientious you were, the more stressed you were. And so you have to kind of put up boundaries around what you can control and what you can't control. But then you're like, well, should I feel guilty for not caring about this? And so, yeah, there's a lot of factors.
You raise a good point about self-care. What did you both do aside from doing your job and showing up online and emailing and phoning and doing whatever? What did you do to care for yourself and stay healthy over the spring?
Well, I really missed the gym.
Yeah, your gym closed.
So I know I went through the stages of grief with that, but I found a new gym. But I definitely had to, even though, because at the time it was still snowing, the wind chill was -20. So I was still getting out. I would bundle up and try to get out for walks just to keep myself sane. It was hard to be home alone all day, even though I'm on a computer. I definitely, as an extrovert, that was hard. So I was on the phone a lot talking to people.
Okay. Rob, what was your routine?
I'm an extrovert too. I think probably a lot of teachers are. So that was, it was a big cocoon of loneliness. But I did go on walk, of
loneliness. That sounds tough.
No, but it was actually really interesting because I had started reading this book right before COVID, actually, and it was called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And it was about essentially how it's impossible to love and be in a hurry at the same time. And I mean, for me as an educator, we're constantly in a hurry, and it's so easy to be like the, you know, the righteous guy walking past the guy on the road who needs help, yeah, or the kid on the road who needs your help because you've got so many urgent things to get to. But so that was just really sobering. And then it was also about like spiritual disciplines. So it was really interesting to be kind of forced into this new rhythm of life, of like solitude and slowing and simplicity, and you can't enjoy all the things that you did before to find your satisfaction and your comfort. And it was just a really deep, I really enjoyed that part of it, even though it was hard. But yeah, I would echo the walks part. I went on so many walks. I think I know all the paths in Cochrane now.
I've seen you behind my house.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. I know there might be some parents listening. And as we're recording this, we're getting ready to move into the fall of 2020, and a new year, and we have, there's some plans in place. But what kind of students thrive? Like, if you could try to diagnose a little bit and say, you know what, it seemed to me that these kids were able to do well in this environment, and these didn't. What would you commend? And like, we're hoping for a more quote unquote normal year, although I think it'll be not anything but that. But what kind of kids thrived as a way of maybe helping parents or students think about what they might need to do to thrive in this environment?
I found that the self-disciplined students did better. The more introverted ones did better. They didn't need as much social interaction, say, as other kids. But what it came down to was, if they can see past this, like, yeah, my grade isn't the most important thing right now, but will me learning this help me next year and the year after that, or when I go into university? I think the students who can see a little bit past the now, I found did better. They just have that maturity to see beyond the moment.
So help, if you're a parent, helping them see the longer game gives them perspective on what's going on in the immediate annoyance of whatever it is.
Absolutely. And maybe sharing just some of the negative consequences of not putting in the time to do this now, because it will catch up with you later.
Okay.
And so that's an important thing.
Okay. Rob, what would you say?
It was really interesting because, overall, I would say the exact same thing. And yeah, students who had resilience, students who had self-control and empathy were able to kind of see the big picture, understand that, you know, this is not normal, but we got to get through this and it'll be okay in the end somehow. They were relatively okay. Some kids who were really chatty and could not focus whatsoever in like a group setting, that was a big struggle for them. When they were at home and they had some sort of, I'm assuming they had some sort of like parental support, they did really well. And that was amazing. Whereas at school, they would really like find ways to distract themselves or be distracted or, you know, do other, there's way more interesting things going on. And so some kids were able to buckle down, which I was like very pleasantly surprised by. But then again, on the other hand, there were lots of like really, you know, high-flying kids who were very conscientious, and this kind of shut them down because they didn't understand like, what are we doing with grades? You know, and they were just very, very worried about all these things. And usually they could control their world by just being very conscientious, working hard and getting good grades. And now that paradigm was kind of broken. So they struggled more than, more than we would have thought necessarily. And we were kind of like, oh, wow, a lot of these kids who are quite strong academically usually are really struggling in other areas. So yeah, no, it was interesting to see the kind of mix. But again, I would say the big, if kids are able to be resilient and empathetic and have self-control, then they will be able to, you know, see the big picture and get past it.
I know that for me, even the normal feedback loops in my own job were different. And I'm probably a little bit more, you know, I was that kid who was looking at the grades pretty closely. And even as I think about the feedback loop with sermons week to week, I'm used to, for years, a certain understanding of coming away from Sunday, kind of going, oh, I understood how that went. Like, I did the work, I preached the sermon, and I can tell by the environment and the feedback loop, that was useful, that was helpful, that was, my work was worthwhile, because I have a way of kind of
gauging it,
evaluating it. But I all spring I would come home after talking to a camera lens, and Cindy would ask me the same question, you know, how did it go? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe it was great, maybe it was terrible, but it was the same as last week. It felt the same. I have no idea what happened. The lens didn't tell me how it went.
Yeah.
And so I can imagine, you know, when you're used to getting teachers giving you some feedback or encouraging you, or, you know, being in phys ed and, you know, winning a game or whatever, all those regular loops of telling you how you're doing, those gauges aren't there as much. You just, you completed it. Way to go. Completed assignment.
Yeah.
I will add, though, I had one girl who wasn't, she she wasn't like a super strong math student at the beginning, and she also didn't love math, but she would be sad if I ended class early or didn't give her enough work, because she was like, give me something to do, give me a challenge. And she ended up with the top mark in the class.
Wow.
Like she increased like 25% because she then just was like, oh, this is interesting, I have something to do. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was really a positive thing for sure.
Just wondering about your coworkers. If you look at your fellow teachers and the ones that really did well this past spring, did you notice anything in particular about what it was that made them thrive, or was it just random? It was a matter of personality, or were there some things that they did or how they functioned that led to their thriving in this difficult time?
I would say tech savvy people did. There were some teachers at our school who were just like, oh, boom, no problem. They had a lot easier of a transition.
Yeah.
But for the most part, even for us, I wouldn't say I'm very tech savvy personally, but the school really supported us and helped us to get to that place where we felt comfortable. And I think we had enough determination to do it.
Okay.
So it went well for even the non-tech savvy people.
Okay.
Yeah. There's tech savvy is part of it for sure. I forgot about that. And I was just thinking about like you as a pastor, but as a teacher too, you would teach lessons online and all the kids have their mics muted, their cameras off, and you'd ask a question and there'd just be crickets. And you're like, oh, guys, you're killing me. I don't even know if you're there. Yeah. It says you're there, but I don't know. But so I don't know. Like I saw... I don't even know how to explain it. Like, I guess I found people who were able to put, how do you say it? Like healthy expectations or boundaries around their work. I feel like had a better chance of being even in a better place, to be calm and to be, you know, present. Whereas if you were really stressed out and if you're really, I mean, I don't have any kids, but a lot of my coworkers who are trying to do this teaching thing while also having toddlers at home and, you know, trying to balance all of that with another spouse who's also working from home, it was crazy. So, I mean, like some of it is just like, you know, I have the privilege of being in this place of life where I'm at. So I found it, you know, in some ways more restful in some ways than normal, but that was definitely not the case for a lot of teachers who, you know, had to deal with all of the things that everyone else had to deal with, you know, managing the kids at home, but also trying to teach and where do you do all this tech from and managing some juggling schedules and all that. But I found if you're able to just, yeah, kind of, again, just see that big picture about, I think, I can only do so much here, and I think I'm going to focus on, you know, whatever my priority is that I think I need to do while maintaining whatever curricular obligations I have. Just do what you can do and be content with that, because you're not going to be able to be all things for all people during COVID especially. But
yeah.
So
you said that well when you said put boundaries and be able to let things go that aren't actually important anymore. Some people struggled with that, and other teachers didn't. So I think that was well said.
I know I talked to my barber last night when I was getting my hair cut, and she talked about how, you know, everything shut down for her business and that it was really great for her to focus on just helping her kids at school, and that was a thing that she appreciated during the spring. But she had such huge respect for her youngest has a split classroom, and both of the women who are the teachers in that classroom had young children of their own. And she just said, I have no idea how they were able to teach my kids and manage their own kids' education at the same time. She said, I just can't imagine how stressful. And they're the same age as me, and I know what I'm dealing with, and I get monofocus, and they have to do all that. So it was great to hear her say that. I guess now that we're looking at fall, what are you doing to get ready for getting back into the classroom as we're expecting here? Or are you just trying not to think about it for a few more weeks?
Had any teaching nightmares yet, Steph?
No, but I am trying to not think about it to an extent, only because things change so fast. I'm not looking forward to wearing a mask and trying to project my voice as I slobber in there. I think it's, you know what, whether I like it or dislike it, I need to just suck it up and get through it. But I think it's hard to say right now because each school is a bit different. Everyone has different class sizes. There's different building opportunities. And I think each school is going to do their best to meet the AHS guidelines. And we as teachers still don't know what those are yet. They're putting policies in place. And then we'll be told, you know, when we go back here in August, and it's going to be we're going to have to just do our best.
Yeah, I think obviously in terms of planning and all that, we're going to have to be careful. Like, I'm going to plan so that if it comes to it, I can have an easy transition to online, because I had some grand ideas of implementing like whole new methods of doing this and that, and I was really excited about it, and I still am, but I don't know if I can do it the way I had. I'm confidently sure that I can't do it the way I want to do it. And it's really funny because newer teachers are trained to teach in a certain way. You know, like modern pedagogy is out the window with COVID.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, how it all rolls out. And kind of like Steph said, I'm trying not to overthink it too much, because, you know, the one thing I'm pretty sure about is that whatever happens, it'll probably change quickly at some point. And so being flexible is going to be really, really important for everyone, but teachers especially. So, yeah, just kind of balance planning well, but also being not too stressed about it, I think, is going to be really key.
Well, if I were to give you the combined powers of the Minister of Education and the Chief Medical Officer, and I said, I want you to make a decision that will make the classroom environment better this fall, with your immense powers, what change or what policy would you institute so that just being a student or a teacher would be better this year?
That's above my pay grade.
I'm not sure I can answer that.
I thought it was such a good question to ask.
It is. Podcast. It's a very divisive question too.
I would say that you want your school division, just like the NBA, to be quarantined at Disneyland and have to do all teaching and all your classroom work at Disneyland and then go to the park in the evenings.
100%.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, I'm a teacher. My wife is a substitute teacher, and I feel like, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I think if things go as they're currently set up, we're going to have a lot of substitute teachers teaching a lot. And, I don't know how they're going to manage cleaning as they say they want to, in terms of just manpower. I don't know how we're going to manage when, if you know, multiple teachers are away, we're already stretched with subs. So I don't know what that's going to look like. Currently it takes a while to test, even if you can book appointment, and then by the time you get tested and then get the results, that's a few days. So, you know, ideally, I think one thing is if teachers could test faster, that would make the system work better, because if teachers are out for like 5 to 10 days, that could really get complicated when we run out of positions. Yeah. So
the favorite story at my house to tell is the substitute teacher fail stories. That's my kids love to tell those. So they would say the less we have substitutes, just have our regular teacher. No offense to the substitute teachers who I'm sure are doing a great job, but my children love to tell tales of woe about substitutes.
I think with the way things are set up right now, it's unrealistic to expect that you're going to have more than 2/3 of your class at any time. And there's going to be a lot of kids that are staying home for a sore throat, whatever it is. And I think it's going to make it an interesting year, because you're going to have to be able to be 100% there for the kids that are at home, but 100% there for the kids that are in the classroom at the same time, let alone if I am out for 5 to 10 days, being able to make sure that the stuff's being getting done when I'm at home. So there's just a lot of dynamics there. There is no right awesome way to do this. I would just say as normal as possible.
Okay. So. All right. Well, last question. Talk to us about how we as people, I know I'm a parent, obviously of students, but how can we support teachers of our kids better as we reengage this fall, as we head into it, whatever it will be? How would you advise us?
I would just ask for a lot of patience and grace, and for us, because we're following what the rules, and I think there's just so many varying opinions and a lot of quick judgments, and I think we just need to peacefully get along somehow, regardless of where we stand in things. Because mm-hmm. when you put a lot of like parents and kids, it's from a wide variety of all in one situation. People are going to love it. People are going to hate it. People are going to be in the middle, and it can cause a lot of tension. And okay. I think it's just important. These are the rules. Let's respect them, even if we don't like them. Because finding loopholes all the time is just not right.
It's tiring. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I would say communicate with your teachers, maybe not all the time, and definitely not out of a place of fear or flight or fight necessarily, but it's good to have like a strong, healthy line of communication, especially if you do have questions or concerns. Have really good habits at home as much as you can in terms of enforcing bedtimes and normal life things, because so many parents or families, the kids were, I mean, and realistically, if I was a middle school kid, I would have been exactly the same way, so I can't really blame them. But so many of my kids were gaming till like 4 a.m then they wouldn't get up till about 3 p.m and so they were living the vampire life, and their parents were like, what do I do with my child? I'm like, well,
tell them to go to bed.
Yeah.
Limit their media. Like if you're on the computer doing schoolwork, force your kid to have a few hours outside doing other things. I mean, yes, there's a time and a place for watching some TV, but I think there's too much of that going on, and it's being allowed. And the kids aren't wise enough to
know
themselves off, and so that's just it's actually in their phones. Take their phones out of their, they're not allowed to have their phones in their room, like take them out.
Fair enough. A lot of our like kind of habits are going to be just so amplified, either for the good or for the bad. So be aware of what your habits are and what your kids' habits are, I would say, is going to be really important, and really shape your kid for the next year. And then I guess also definitely pray for the schools, pray for the teachers, pray for just the whole situation.
Yeah, I keep mentioning in my prayers, God, like there's a lot of things I'm praying for in these days, but the big picture, if you could just end the pandemic, then a lot of these things get solved fast. So I'm still praying the big one. Let's just see this one end. That would be great.
Yep.
And Rob, your comment on habit formation. I know we as a church staff actually are one of our main emphases for this entire ministry year is going to be on the development of habits that will help us. Well, of course, we're developing people spiritually here. So how do we develop habits like that in the just the automatic loops of how we live our lives that will enable us to be, well, you talked about resilience and empathetic. And what was the third word you used there?
Self-control.
Self-control. We want to build in some habits along resiliency, engaging with God, having a focus on others. But I think it's important not just to like develop stuff where you're consciously doing things all the time, but just to have certain ways that you automatically follow into rhythms and you don't have to think about it all the time. And, you know, going to sleep on time is a great example of this one thing that affects so much else. And it's not even really a matter of like having to think about it. It just needs to be a cultivated habit. So, thanks for that. And I would just say on behalf of parents and society, that's a pretty big statement to make. We thank you for your chosen vocation. And thanks for investing in our kids, hanging in a time of teaching that no one who's alive has experienced before, at least in our part of the world. And may God bless you as you get ready to teach again this year, whatever it may hold, whether it's as good as we might hope for or whether it's up and down as could well be. So God bless you both.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for listening to The Real Podcast. For more information on this episode and others, check out our website at CochraneAlliance.com/real. And if there's something that you've learned or would like to comment on, feel free to drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep it real.